Hello and welcome to This Might Be The News. My name is Rory and this week I'm joined by my friend Sophie.
Hiya.
And my friend Abby.
Hello.
How are you both?
We're good, aren't we?
We are good. A little dusty this morning.
Yeah. Like a little book from a case.
We're away for Abby's birthday. It's been a fabulous weekend, but still commitment to the cause. Not the Irish pop group. Commitment to the cause. We will still record the podcast.
I wish they were here.
I've ruined that phrase forever now. So we still have a podcast to record. We're going to have a special little trimmed down version of This Might Be The News this week, and that's because we are in a van.
Back in the van.
We're in Sophie's van. We're in a car parking spot, but it's not quite a parking spot, so the feds might be on our tail at any point and we might need to pick up sticks and hit the road. So we're gonna do a trimmed down one just in case that happens.
Yeah.
So we're just gonna tackle one of the biggest stories of the week, and there's only one way to tackle that, and that's with the facts.
Facts.
Facts. So I noticed on the old social media,
yeah,
a new hashtag. Something about hashtag 100 vote.
Yeah.
So I
thought, exciting, isn't it?
So I thought, do you know what? I'll get to the strongest, most fabulous women I know to come educate me.
Stop it! We are fabulous, though. I feel so fabulous.
Thanks, darling.
Fun, fabulous, and fancy free.
That's what they fought for, isn't it? They fought for fabulous.
That should have been fight for fabulous.
So
sounds like a holiday advert, Thompson holiday advert. Fight for fabulous.
Yeah, be more fabulous. So okay, so I've invited to the strongest, most inspiring women I know educate me.
But we are.
Educate me on the topic of women's suffrage.
Well, it's really exciting, actually, isn't it? Because it's been 100 years since the People's Reform Act was passed, which essentially gave women the vote. Every woman.
So this was the first wave one of women.
Wave one of women voting, and it was for people who, it was for homeowners, and you had to be over 30. So over 30, and you had to be a homeowner. But it essentially meant for the first time you weren't just represented by your husband or father.
Okay.
God forbid. Imagine.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the system pre 1918. So if you're a woman, you're 30, you've got a home, who is voting on your behalf?
You did not have a voice.
Really?
Genuinely.
Could you imagine like having your husband or your father just say exactly what you were saying, like,
we vote for...
Yeah, I've decided this is what we want.
Yeah.
I suppose... So what was interesting, and it seems like it stems from, like, participation within society. So the whole idea was that women shouldn't have a vote because they're not working and they're not active participants, and most notably, they couldn't serve their country. So that was why they shouldn't be allowed a vote, because they weren't able to kind of give back.
Okay, so at this point, there's been all the wars. I mean, I guess this is at the tail end of the Second World War. And
yeah.
Maybe not a coincidence, Abby. Well, like, I think...
Very true, Rory. Not a coincidence. I was just waiting to say another good point. Can I say another point?
Go for it.
I also wanted to say that even women themselves weren't all that desperate for the vote. So some of the most prominent women, like Queen Victoria, talked about the mad, wicked folly of women's rights.
Really?
When describing the suffragettes.
Is she not in the sisterhood then?
Not into it.
This is funny, isn't it, though? Because it was such a new thought, wasn't it? Like, do you ever think,
exactly.
I often think, like, what happens if I was born in, like, 1900? Would I be as feisty maybe as I am now? Like, would I just be, you know, cleaning and ironing, and
you'd have been starting from much like lower.
Well, you just like levels. It's that you're born into like what your thoughts are.
Well, even progressives at the time, like Florence Nightingale, what a progressive woman in terms of medicine and care, and she was also not a fan.
So really? was she involved? So what did she have to say?
She was just quite outspoken and pretty anti. I haven't got any direct quotes for you.
She was hating on the suffrage.
She was hating on the suffrage, and I find that so interesting because this is obviously a woman that took her career so seriously, that believed women had a lot to offer society and yet didn't believe that she should have the vote.
Yeah, well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think she specifically, I mean, I think I'm more surprised by Queen Victoria, who was in a position of power, who maybe not didn't even really feel the effects, but she should have. I think Queen Victoria should have. But Florence Nightingale was very insular. Like, she wanted to do her job and work and stuff like that, but it well, wasn't.
I'm just reading what she said. She just said, "I've never felt the want of a vote." So she's more, I'm keeping out of it. I'm trying to keep save all these people.
Right, yeah.
Do you know
yeah.
what? I've got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Arguably, a same size fish sideways. A side
but
fish.
I think lots of people back then kind of thought that women didn't have anything to participate. So even if they were better educated, there were so many women that were better educated than some of the men that had the vote, and they still weren't able to vote. And that's really essentially why it all kind of came about. But what's funny about it is that, like, if women weren't working and they weren't being seen to kind of contribute, they kind of thought, like, why should they run this country? And in theory, like, why should people who aren't, like, but like back in the day, like, if I make myself, you can almost understand that logic. But what was not logical was the fact that women were contributing to their country, yep. and they were educated and they did understand. And so if you have a comprehension of that stuff, then you absolutely should be entitled to the vote.
Yeah. And I think so what we're touching on with the world, so this happened in 1918, towards the end of the Second World War. The women's contribution to, the First World War, women's contribution to that was one of the things that accelerated the the extension of the franchise. Is that what it's called? It's all big words, suffrage, franchise. I mean, don't understand any of it. So that was one factor, but another factor clearly was the work of the suffragettes themselves. So
they went cray cray, didn't they? So they really hit it hard.
What was the deal? The original squad.
Emily Pankhurst, the big squad. They did some cray cray things. Like, essentially, they started like shouting in Parliament and things like that. Like,
chaining themselves to railings.
Throwing themselves under horses, and I think it was all very radical. And I think it's really funny because I think it kind of echoes in our world at the moment. It's like how you go about doing it, and they went and they were radical. And I know that I was listening to a thing, and that they used to go into the Houses of Parliament and they'd wait and sit and wait to have some time with someone from Parliament, and then when the policeman turned his back, they'd jump on the table and be like, "Vote for women!" And it got to a point when so many women were coming in and doing this, they said that it was unsafe for them to be in the Houses of Parliament, and they basically were upping it and upping it and up it. And I think when she killed herself in the Derby,
and who is that who went to the Derby? Was that Pankhurst?
No, that's
Emily Wilding Davison, I believe.
Threw herself under the King's Horse on Derby Day, 1913, and was killed. So, people, I mean, obviously there was a lot of debate about the time about whether that was the right thing to do and whether how effective that was. But what it definitely did was bring attention.
Well, and this
was a response to the media portrayal of suffragettes as well.
In what way?
Well, suffragette was a really derogatory term. So the Daily Mail, when using it, for example.
Oh, of course the Mail.
You love the Mail, Abby.
I like looking at the pictures. No one gets a better photo than the Daily Mail. But suffragette was such a derogatory term because you know how cigarette is a little cigar?
Yeah.
And leatherette is a little piece of leather. That suffix, et, is used to describe something as like small or like weak or womanly, essentially. Okay. So suffragette was a really patronising term. Just by calling them
the little
that word.
The little suffrages.
Yeah, you've instantly got that.
Oh wow,
So I think it's just a knee-jerk reaction to being patronised.
But do you not think that this echoes in, like, we've had so many debates on this about, like, the hashtag Me Too, and, like, I know all of three of us have been in debates together and with other people about what the effect the media's having on, like, on how we're taking the movement of feminism,
yeah.
and whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing or the way to go about doing it is, yeah. like... It's really hard, and I think it's exactly the same back then as it is now. It's really hard to judge what's the right way to go about it. And quite frankly, I think that this is a really great example. Sometimes it doesn't matter how you go about doing it, as long as someone's still doing something. There's still like activity happening. Like, yeah, not ideal that, you know, someone died and whatever, but it was for a cause that brought the attention, and that's all we're doing it digitally now.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, it's like the more like the violence. to some extent is never acceptable, like setting fire to people's homes, which was in
ideal. Letterbombs and stuff like that.
It sounds like the
like a game of Worms. Do you ever play Worms?
I was aware of it as a boy.
Okay, you're not going to understand this reference, but like
neither will anyone. I mean, I'm reading here that the Prime Minister was attacked with a dog whip. I mean, what was going on?
That's pretty extreme.
Well, would people do that sort of stuff now? Like Corbyn, would he be attacked now? What, you say that? What was the MP that was attacked?
Oh no, that was horrendous.
Yeah, that was
Joe Cox.
Joe Cox was murdered, but that was part of Britain First. I think he shouted. So,
but it's still a topic that people are getting. You know, you know, it's annoying because that was really it's really completely unjust. But in my opinion. That's what's so weird. Like he did something radical, fighting for an opinion that he believed in, and it was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to look at the parallels, like you say, of like between this and the Me Too movement, because like a lot of men's knee jerk reaction is to go, I agree with the cause, and I don't like, but I don't like the way it's being raised. I don't like the process, and sort of that. Was also what Winston Churchill's reaction was to the violence. He was kind of like, you're going backwards.
Yeah, you're undermining yourself by the way you're doing it. And there's so much talk, I think, sometimes in life about, I want to say this emotionally, I want to say this, but I'm going to, like, what's the best way to say it? And I personally am also like, say it logically, work with logic, and the emotion can fuel it, but don't let it be part of it.
Mm.
But at the same time, I do kind of think like, it is the driver, like emotions and these feelings and all that, like that drives life, doesn't it?
You need the mix of like the people making the practical, logical case, but you then also need the people doing a bit more.
Yeah, I think free speech is hard because everyone's just going to say their own thing. And I don't know, like there are moments, I suppose, at the moment when so much is coming up about it. So there was another thing this week where a group of workers at Tesco's were getting together because they were fighting for equal pay.
Yeah.
Now that's a really great way, like that we haven't sorted out equal pay in our country at all, or like equal pay doesn't exist in the same way. And so,
although, in terms of legislation, there isn't.
Yeah, and then the BBC, they've had loads of like the radio presenters. The men came out a couple of weeks ago and said that they were going to take a pay cut to make it more equal.
Yeah.
Now equal pay is somewhere where we're still not there. So although we might have votes now, and although we are treated like equal citizens most of the time, we don't have equal pay. It's like there's still inequality. There's still fights to be had. And it's like how you go about doing it. And
Well, so what do you think of like the big... So because this sort of a lot of the rhetoric was we've come a long way, 100 years, but we've still
come
got
a long way.
Yeah.
And enough that's further.
That's what
long.
Gary Barlow wrote that song about. It was about women's suffrage. So.
Never forget where you're coming from.
Well, the poor listener.
The suffragists. Sorry, yeah, I've got a read back on as well.
So. We've come a long way,
and we've got
a long way to go. When people are saying that, what comes to mind, Abby, about where you think like what are the big priorities when it comes to addressing the gender gap?
Do you know what I find quite interesting actually is that so I work in a really progressive company. I'm very lucky in terms of addressing the gender gap, but something that my company does is offer 4 months paternity leave.
Paternity. Okay, wow.
And I bring this up because obviously when you talk about the gender gap, then there are certain women's rights like generous maternity leave that certain people think should be applied for men as well.
Yeah.
When we're talking about equality. And it's interesting that when you first say to people, oh, 4 months paternity, isn't that amazing? Equality, etc. They're like, yeah, incredible. But when you dig deeper, that actually causes some friction in the workplace, because you have guys just taking off every Friday for like consecutively for like a year and playing golf, or like taking a
not
month
actually using it
for that purpose, whereas it would be very hard to think of a woman who's breastfeeding a child or having to, you know, be there after the birth for a few months to get on with it, having the same luxury. So it just raises the question, where do we start to, how do you start to make everything equal? Like, where do you stop?
Also, how has that got prioritised in the let's make things equal? Oh, yeah, let's make sure that men get more time off.
Yeah, exactly.
Because like, we've got a really, really long list of all the reasons, the ways we need to improve, like...
Women, I know you like equal pay.
Yeah. Things to women. And then a very short list from
how
men.
How can men play more golf?
How can we get more holiday time from men? Oh, that one got prioritised, did it? That one got passed.
That one sneaked through.
It's, I think, yeah, like, unfortunately, sort of like, well, not unfortunately, but the fact is, when you have a baby, that the mum just needs to spend more time those early months, that the man...
Well, I said, do you know what? I think it's all about modern relationships, and I think that there are different variations, and you might still have traditional relationships where the woman is at home and the man is the breadwinner or whatever, but I think what's happening now is you're getting a next generation of women who are breadwinners and the men might be at home, or there might be more equality in it. And I know, like, in terms of how I would want to live my life, but I would want it to be a very equal. And although, mm-hmm. yeah, the child has come from my body, mm-hmm. I have friends who it is very equal, and to have that paternity leave is amazing because it means that either the woman can go back to work earlier, or they can swap it around where, you know, the woman has the first 4 months and then the man has another 4 months.
I think it can,
but it's got to be even, and it's got to be honest.
It can then indirectly improve the balance.
Exactly. But then the equality question is then raised again when you have single women at work saying, so why are men who happen to be married to women who have a child given 4 months additional holiday per year when I don't have the same right? And actually they're going on safari and doing all these wonderful things. So again, it's this question of...
Hang on, I don't understand that. What, like...
So essentially single women without children, or women without children, so, in the workplace.
Actually, by being two parents, you combined get this
extra
amount of time that you can use as you wish.
Exactly.
Whereas, they're saying, one way of improving it would be to give them paternity, the equivalent of, like, the amount of paternity leave.
So if they're not going to have children,
if they're going to have children but be a single parent.
Yeah. They get double.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
just get a few more months, really.
Yeah. That's a progressive company, like the amount of companies that don't even have that. And even the maternity pay is horrendous. But then it brings up this whole, I was listening to this thing about it this week, and it is that thing. So I listened to some woman who had got promoted, and then she said that she was having a baby, and they instantly fired her. And it's that thing of...
Is that legal?
No, I don't know. I didn't listen to the whole program, but it was like this
headlines, babes.
Headlines only.
It was all about, it was a group that was trying to represent women who, it was all about having children and working. And like, you can understand that it must be tough in a business wise to have someone and then they go off, but it, even however tough it is, you just got to make it work. It's just a fact of life that women will just have to go off and have babies and then they'll come back. And do you know what? And then they said the stats were that if you supported that woman through her maternity leave, she would come back and be a much more effective worker. And actually, we're losing more money by not supporting these causes.
Yeah.
And in terms of productivity, and if they did equal pay and they sorted out the maternity thing, there'd be so much more money in our economy because women would feel more comfortable and it would just be an easier process. It's almost like there just needs to be like a flat idea which says, we will support you. This is like given, and everyone just expects as a given that people can go off. And yeah, I think with the men having paternity leave, I think that should be like a negotiation element. I feel like that should be on offer.
Right.
But I don't know.
So we think pay gap, the issue around maternity, paternity leave. What are the other sort of big challenges, Abby, you think we face going into 2018? It's just the beginning.
Just the beginning. I am still quite fascinated by the role of women in the workplace and the character that they are meant to assume. Like, I still find that really interesting in terms of if I maybe get upset about something and am quite angry in making my view known at work, I'd be called bossy or bolshy. And yeah. then every guy did it, he would be seen as a natural leader.
Assertive.
Yeah. Charismatic leader qualities. I still think that's so rife. So when we talk about equality in terms of, you know, tangible legislation, I still think we've got an awful long way to go in terms of mindset, to be honest.
Absolutely. In my job, I've got some females at the top. And, you know, one of them is a different character to how you would assume in that role, even though that role is mainly done by men.
Yeah.
And it is hilarious to watch her almost all-male team not handle it, like not handle the fact that she is quite emotional and she's very kind of, you know, impulsive and will shout stuff and is it's just really, really demanding and all these things. And now if there was a guy, they might think that guy was a cock, but they wouldn't roll their eyes and act in the way that they sometimes act. And I stand there, and although I don't particularly, you know, I find the way she works quite chaotic, I am also like, you know, she's amazing. She stayed constant, and she's not dealt with, like, she's not taken on board any of the shit, and she still has to like deal with them essentially giving, like, you know,
giving her
the rolling eyes. Yeah, it's rolling eyes, isn't it?
Like, men have shaped sort of like what is considered best practice in a lot of ways, like what is a good presentation style. Be
exactly.
loud and big and confident. Negotiations, be tough and be and all of that. And it's sort of, I think, yeah, like one of the next steps is you have to sort of question those norms.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't just benefit women, it benefits men who don't want to have to feel like they conform to that as well. Like there's the Robert Webb book, it's sort of How Not to Be a Boy, where it talks about like the constant struggle with growing up in a world where you're told to be one way, like be good at sport and be tough and all that, and then not wanting to be like that.
No. So I think you really take that.
I mean, I've adapted.
I've always admired how much you've really gone against
the grain
in terms of that. But my dad, a very controversial man, my dad, but my dad says men are lost now and they don't know who to be because they're kind of being told that they shouldn't be
what we
manly.
Need is a good war to sort us out.
That's probably something you'd say, yeah. But like in terms of like gender and all those classic things that used to be so prominent in our society, it's all kind of getting a little bit blurry. And so you can see that reflected in modern relationships and how difficult it can be because no one's really quite sure where the lines are. Like everyone's, it's all very fluid. And so actually meeting people that kind of fit in is kind of harder because of the fluidity and the fact that you can't be like, oh, you're a butch guy who's going to take the lead and be in control and earn the money.
Yeah.
You meet someone and you're like, you're a butch guy who cries at Love Actually and...
Guilty.
Earns loads of money, but, you know, doesn't like...
It's so true. And I think, like, we've got a lot of challenges going into this year. Like, you've got the big things that need to be tackled. Because also, like, women's representation in politics, but women's representation just in big industry jobs.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
still there. But I think one of the other big challenges is well-intentioned men who do support the sisterhood, feeling like they have a place in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And feeling like they, because everyone stands to benefit from everyone working together on this one.
It's so true that, as well, Sheryl Sandberg, COO of Facebook, recently flagged exactly Rory's point in that there are men who want to help women, but they are now afraid to mentor them one-on-one because they don't quite know how their actions or behaviour
There was a stat this week that two-thirds of more senior execs now wouldn't feel comfortable taking on a female protege to mentor because of sort of where the conversation's gone in the last
year.
That's
silly, and it's really important that those people don't feel like that. That it's really important that they don't start pandering to it.
It takes a bit from everyone.
You can't be over cautious. It's like the safety guard mad, you know, in this kind of day and age.
So men need to be more resilient and go be more educated, but then also they need to be welcomed into the conversation rather than being we will make mistakes in the way we're trying to talk about the issue, and we need to be corrected rather than attacked.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're running out of time.
I would say that also, just one last point.
One last point.
Is that they were talking to about the politicians and the fact that the lack of female politicians really in politics, but a lot of women, there was a poll put out, but there was a lot of women don't feel comfortable going, p- putting their head above the parapet, that's what they said, in politics because of the amount of like bullying and online kind of
the trolling that goes on and like the abuse on like on social media for women MPs is ridiculous compared to the amount that men get. It's really worrying.
And that's sad. Like that, I mean, that is the foundation of our like democracy. Mm-hmm. Like if we can't start that, like that's where we should start. Like it's insane.
Yeah. So the fight continues. We all need to be committed to
the
cause.
Viva la revolution.
Viva la revolution.
keep fighting the good fight, everyone.
Man, I feel like a woman.
Shania Twain, the original sister. Yeah. Well, thank you both for joining me and educating me. And we could talk about this for hours.
I think we could, yeah.
We will. Just going to the pub. We'll continue this.
Let's take this to the pub. Listeners, come join us. We're at the green Man in somewhere.
In Wimborne, Dorset.
We'll pull up a pew for you. Anyway, see you next week, listeners.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to This Might Be The News. If you enjoyed this week's episode, then we would love it if you shared it with all your friends. Even better would be reviewing it on iTunes, which will help other people find us. Cheers!